As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
.755 is real with David O'Brien and Erica Flaherty is on the air now.
Welcome back in a fun episode of 755 is Real. On deck for you all, producer Cam here with you, David and Eric answering your questions in real time on the Athletic app's live room function on Friday afternoon. I'm recording this Friday night after the series opener against the Reds. Braves, unfortunately, stumble 11-10 in that matchup. Ellie De La Cruz hits for the cycle, but to see a game go 11-10, all the fireworks that took place there, such a fun game, and that's what you hope for as a baseball fan, even with the Braves loss. But David and Eric providing a bit more optimism, looking at some topics you guys are interested in, and we love all the feedback we get from you guys in these live rooms. And this also gives us a glimpse into what topics you're interested in, and it somewhat helps us construct what we're going to talk about throughout the upcoming weeks. So in today's episode, discussing the fastest players in Major League Baseball, including Ellie De La Cruz. The Red series kind of brought up this topic. The metrics support De La Cruz being a blindingly fast player, but Ronald Acuna Jr. also in that conversation. But this conversation also parlayed itself into the odd criticism of Acuna not giving 100% supposedly when he's base running. David provides some really unique insight into this matter as he spoke with Brian Snitker about how Acuna is pacing himself this season. And not only has this been able to help sustain his health throughout the year, but may even also be contributing to that stolen base total as it's starting to encroach on unprecedented territory, especially when you pair it with the home runs. The guys also get into some early trade deadline needs and wants, if there are any. Many are still concerned. Many of you guys are still concerned about Bryce Elder, for him to regress. The guys talk about it and kind of also push back on it. I mean, is he an all-star candidate? We get into that a little bit today. And then also, to end on this, the weird criticism of Marcell Ozuna, his celebration with Wash after the home run in the Phillies finale. Not really sure what it's about. Not quite sure why the booth would dig at Ozuna like that, but David and Eric discuss it momentarily. And as always, we appreciate all the support. Make sure you're following David and Eric on Twitter at DOBrianATL at UF34. And if you aren't already, make sure you're subscribed to The Athletic to read all of David's excellent content. You can take advantage of our summer sale right now. It's $1 a month for 12 months. All you have to do is go to theathletic.com/755isreal. Make sure you take advantage of it. Not only will you get all of David's excellent writing, you'll get 755 is Real ad-free on The Athletic app. You can also listen to The Athletic Baseball Show with Jason Stark, Ken Rosenthal, Andy McCullough. You also get all their written work as well. So many excellent voices in the podcast feed on our baseball side as well as the written side. So take advantage of it while this deal lasts through June 30th. Again, theathletic.com/755isreal. That's a shameless plug. I'm going to stop right here, pass it off to David and Eric for today's edition of 755 is Real.
First of all, Braves, Reds, man. Who would have thought a month ago even that this series, I mean, I, I, uh, I figured this series is going to be like most Braves-Reds series in recent years, absolutely meaningless. But instead, it's like the most anticipated series of the week, even more so than the Phillies. They went up to Philly and faced the Phillies, and both teams had won six games in a row and 13 out of 15 when the Braves went up there. Now the Braves go to face the Reds. The Braves have won eight in a row. The Reds have won 11 straight. And I saw Sarah Langs, the great Sarah Langs, had a stat. It's only the seventh time, I think, that two teams have faced each other on winning streaks of eight or more games to each team. So that's pretty cool. And the Reds are, you know, they're at that excited stage in their development now where they've got a guy like their Acuña, Ellie De La Cruz, who's just phenomenal. I mean, it's like Acuña, just a five-tool guy with the tools off the charts. And now he's really doing something every day that drop jaws. But they've got a lot of young players who are contributing, and they got a great vibe going there. So this is going to be a really cool series for the Braves. You could argue that the two most dynamic young players in the game are going to be on the field during this series.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's hard because you always want to say Ohtani, but I don't know if he even counts as he's like two guys at once, but
yeah, plus he's not 23, 24 years old either.
Right, that's true. I just think of him as young because he's got a little bit of service time, but yeah, De La Cruz yesterday hit a ball that, I mean, it was just a bloop single, and it looked like he took four steps from when he got to first to sliding at second.
His strides are phenomenal. Jesus.
Insane.
He's got a body of a world-class, like, quarter miler. So that's why I'm surprised so surprised that he can get out of the gate so quick, though. His stride is so long. Usually those guys, it takes them a while to really – they're great from, like, first to third or first to home, but not necessarily big base stealers because it takes them a while to really get top gear, but he's not. He's also got, like, ultra-high fast twitch, and he just gets going right away. He had a single the other day on a ground ball to first base, and it wasn't an error. Dude fielded it at the back of the infield, and he just beat him to the base. It was an infield single to first base.
Yeah, he's got D. Gordon speed with Stanton power.
It's crazy. And an arm like Acuña, you know, and three or four other guys, and that's about it. That throw the ball as hard as him. So that's going to be really exciting. And I'm looking it up. By the way, Ohtani is 28. Yeah. This kid is 20, what, 21? De La Cruz? Let me see. I think so. He's really young. De La Cruz is 21.
Yep.
And Acuña is now... feels like he's still so young because he missed a year and all that, but he's 25. But yeah, so Ohtani, and plus, I mean, Ohtani's obviously the unicorn because he pitches and hits, which nobody else does. But he doesn't play with the kind of swag and the same flair that the flamboyance that these guys do. I mean, it's not, you watch him and you don't just like, he just does things that make your jaw drop, but it's not like his every movement is crazy.
He doesn't sell it, yeah.
Yeah, he runs fast, but it's like just a straight, boring, fast runner.
It's clean.
Yeah, it's clean. And you know, he doesn't like, he doesn't do anything on his home run trots, and he doesn't do anything outlandish in the outfield or anything. I mean, he's just an incredible player. What he's doing, nobody else can do, obviously. But it's just different. There's no style to it, if that's fair. And I'm not downplaying it because of that. I'm just saying they're so different, you know? I would put Tatis in the category with these guys that are both five-tool players and have all that swagger as well, that flamboyance.
Yeah, I mean, Ohtani will let you know if he gets one. You know, he'll take a few steps and – you know, maybe a little flair on the strikeouts, but he's also just a super nice guy.
Yeah. And these guys are too, but they're just different, you know, and the culture is different too, man.
Yeah.
You got to remember, he comes from a different culture. I mean, that's not part of the culture over there. And it is, and you know, it is with some people here and younger generation here. So anyway, it's going to be a great series. It should be. And man, you think you're doing I like the decision they made to push back Smith-Shawver. AJ Smith-Shawver from his start was going to be Thursday. And when Wednesday's game got rained out in Philly, what they did was they kept Bryce Elder on his start Thursday because Bryce is pitching so great. They didn't want to move him, shake him from his routine or whatever at all. And also, I mean, that's a snake pit now in Philly, man. It's really loud again now. It's like last year it started getting that way at the end of the season, and it is really loud now. They had 37,000 there for a Tuesday night game, and it was loud. So in that lineup they have, even though the Reds won 11 in a row, they don't have that kind of murderer's row lineup. Like the Phillies have got some guys, some big bats in that lineup. So I like the decision to keep Elder on that start Thursday, and you move Smith-Shawver from his Wednesday start to this start tonight in Cincy. Now, you know, in normal times, you would have thought, okay, that's a big difference. That's a nice casual crowd. There won't be anybody there. You know, you're playing in the hitter's ballpark, but with nobody, you know, there's no real pressure. All of a sudden, that's changed. I'm assuming they're going to have a good crowd. That's definitely a completely hitter-friendly ballpark, and it's just a team playing much better. And they can be really disruptive when they get on the bases, you know, kind of like Cruz. But they got some base stealers on that team.
Yeah, and they're hungry. They're tasting it for the first time in a while. You know, those for me, some of these teams, the first year they're good are the scariest.
Yeah,
because they don't even have any fear yet. They don't know what it's like to get crushed or fall apart late or anything. I mean, it's all just chase. It's all possibilities and uphill. And they get hungry and start tasting it. You know, they don't even know how to give up yet. So every game turns into a tough one.
And they ain't worrying about pacing themselves or anything like that, man.
Nope.
Jason Stark got a good story today in The Athletic. He was talking about the new rules and how can you design a team for the new rules, because he was asking a bunch of front office people at spring training about that. And he said, well, now I'm not asking that because now we see that we got the answers now. And there's a few teams that are really benefiting from the new rules, and it's helped them, you know, and they were on the cusp of being good anyway, or already were. But they've gotten better in the case of the D-backs and Orioles. And then the Reds, the new rules have really contributed to the emergence of all this young talent that they've accumulated over the past 5 years during their rebuild, when they've been horrible and drafting so high and getting, you know, trades, bringing in prospects for trading away the veterans that they did have. But anyway, so the D-backs, Orioles, and Reds were the teams that he focused on. In the Reds case, man, there were a couple of things. The Reds, okay, they got an 11-game winning streak. That's catapulted them into first place in that very winnable NL Central. That's the other thing. If they were in a division like the East right now, you know, they would still be behind the Braves, well behind them. But they're sitting on top of first place in the Central. And like you said, they're hungry. And they know they can win the Central. They're a game and a half ahead of the Brewers. The Cardinals have been the biggest disappointment in baseball. They're 31-44. Including 13-21 in front of their adoring fans at Busch Stadium. That's just like things are upside down in St. Louis, but they're in last place. But the Reds are sitting up there going, you know, we can win this thing. So never mind a wild card. But they went from being – they had the worst stolen base success rate in the NL last year. They only had they had the third fewest stolen bases in the league. This year, they're leading the National League in stolen bases.
Yeah.
That's a big part of what they're doing. They got Votto back, and that was a big boost, too. That's I was among those who had written him off after, you know, his rehab setbacks during his rehab assignment earlier in the year. And he was really struggling on that rehab assignment. Then he comes back and hits a home run in his first game back. And so they added that vibe to the whole thing.
He's one of the toughest hitters I've ever faced. I mean, he's a lot for me like Freddie Freeman, where I feel like if they can, you know, but Joey does some, he makes some changes to his swing where he'll go like a whole season and hit four homers. And then the next year he'll say, I decided I want to hit homers and he'll hit 40. Like he does weird stuff. But as far as his bat to ball skills, staying inside the ball, and especially facing him lefty lefty, he's one of the last guys I ever wanted a part of. So if he's able to get himself on the field, I don't doubt him.
Yeah, Jason had a couple of stats on the Reds. He had They got 78 stolen bases. That's 20 more than they had all last season. No team in baseball has scored from second base on a single more than the Reds. That's a pretty big one. You know, taking the extra bases. They got these young, hungry, fast guys. Only the Diamondbacks and the Rays have taken an extra base on a higher percentage of singles or doubles than the Reds, 48%. How fast is this team, Jason writes? It's got five players who rank in the 90th percentile in average sprint speed, according to StatCast. The Cardinals, they got one. And the 90th percentile, Acuna, believe it or not, it's not even in the 90th percentile, which is hard to believe. But I think that, you know, it's a small sample size still. And so I really think Acuna is in that percentile if you were just going on speed alone and not just accumulating incidents and averaging that out.
Well, he doesn't always. I think he's learned how to pace himself, too.
Yeah, Snit, I did a story. I wrote about that today because we've heard that from a lot of people. And John Kruk is the latest to criticize on the air the other day when Acuna didn't run out of routine ground ball. Said something about called him a lazy runner or something like that, which I thought was just offensive. And it's not accurate. And I asked Snit about that because we talked about that, how certain star players, especially if they've had some injuries, some leg injuries, guys late in their career, but also a guy like Acuna who plays balls out at all time in the outfield. He's always running hard, stolen bases all the time, going after balls in the gaps. He's running all the time, trying to get an extra base. So it's we said the same thing that we thought he'd probably been told on a very routine ground ball. Use your own judgment. But there are some routine ground balls that are so routine that 99.9% of the time, it's an out. The guy's not going to flub a boot, a ground ball right to him. And that's what it's going to take for a guy because you can, some ground balls you could drop, you could boot and still get a guy, but you have to weigh the very, very slim chance that a good fielder is going to boot a ball against, is it worth putting that stress on your leg? So there are times when Acuna doesn't go all out on those. I asked Snit about it. Sure enough, Snit goes, I think he's done a great job this year of knowing when to let off on the gas and when not to, when to go all. He goes, I don't want him exploding his hamstrings every time he touches the ball, because he touches the ball a lot on offense and defense. And I thought that was great of Snit to say that, because he said, I think he's had developed a really good gauge on when he needs to go all out. So they have no problem whatsoever with the team. In fact, they like him doing that. They leave it up to him to use his judgment, but they have no problem at all with him not completely busting it, leaving on the field on a routine ground ball to second base or shortstop.
You know, what most people see is when the camera pans to the runner. You know, right. Like a lot of guys take 3, 4, 5 hard steps out of the box, and then they watch the play. And if you get out of the box hard, if the guy bobbles it, he's not getting you. If he throws it and the first baseman catches it, because you got to think, if they bobble it or drop it, it's not one step. That they don't drop the ball and pick it up in the time that you took one step. You get 4 or 5 while that ball's being bobbled. Same with if the first baseman comes off the bag or drops it. You're getting 3, 4, 5 steps. So guys watch it. They bust it out of the box. And then when they see the throw on the way, they kind of let up and cruise to the bag because they're either safe or out at that point. But they can't go any faster and beat it. And the camera pans to him right at that point. The camera pans to first base and follows the throw. So what you see on TV is the guy taking 3, 4, 5 pretty easy steps. And then it's a looks like if he would have ran hard, he would have made it. But I promise, I mean, from Little League all the way up to my last game being a position player, you run as fast as you can and you think you're going to beat it, you're always out by a step. So it's kind of like the way that the camera pans to him, even if they bust it out of the box, it might look shitty on TV. And then at the same time, it's like you said, if you hit a high bouncing ground ball to a shortstop right at them, they don't have to move.
Yeah.
You're out 99.9% of the time. So
right.
I think a great example is like Bryce Harper when he first came up and he was crashing into fences.
Yeah.
And trying to beat out ground balls. And you could see him, he's out by two steps and he's running as hard as he can and slamming his foot into the bag. And everybody's saying this guy's going to get hurt if he doesn't calm down. And you know, at some point it seemed like he just said, all right, my body can't handle this. And Acuna's already had a major injury. So he's stealing bags. He's taking extra bases. He's running his ass off when it matters.
Eric, let's hear from today's sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
He's had a couple of times crossing first base where he hurt his knee, you know, across the awkward step trying to beat out a thing. And I think he's one of those type of guys that if he doesn't kind of shut it down a little bit going, then he's going to try to beat it. So he goes all out, and he's more susceptible to those injuries crossing first base because he takes that lunging last step trying to beat it. That's just the way he is. He's not going to just discipline himself to go, okay, go all out, but under control. I mean, he's going to go balls to the wall and try to beat it out. So it's like, you know, and he's never going to beat those ones, like you said, out, but he's going to try. So I think it's a good decision. I agree with Snit, man.
Yeah,
you don't need to see a guy pull a hamstring doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you when it's a problem is when your teammates are saying something, or a manager's saying something,
right?
Or a coach, or somebody's bringing it up, or a GM, when somebody says he doesn't look inspired out there, or something like that. But he's playing his ass off.
Yeah. But that's a great point, though, you made about. Those there's enough of those times, even if it's just a handful of times, that when they average the speed on all these events, as they call them, that would take you down. If you were only going 25 miles an hour on six of those instead of 30 miles an hour, that's going to take you down. So that's a good point. Like Ellie De La Cruz has not been up that long, and every time he hits a ground ball, he thinks he can beat it out, because a lot of times he can. He beat out an infield single the other day. So this dude's at 30.9 right now per second. That's the fastest guy in baseball right now.
I'm more averaged in like that max speed. You know, what numbers are they putting up when they're full speed?
Right.
Not, hey, the guy makes contact every time and he hits a bunch of routine ground balls. Or even, I mean, you can hit a sure double and jog it 70% and get the double.
The only guy during the StatCast era that's ever had an average sprint speed as fast as that, 30.9, you can probably guess him if you think about it. Another injury-prone guy who is trying to learn not to do that.
Buxton?
Yep.
Yeah.
21-year-old Byron Buxton averaged 30.9 feet per second in 2015, exactly what De La Cruz is right now.
That Corbin Carroll dude looks like he's going 40.9, but he's not as tall.
I know. He's so small. Yeah, those strides are really lightning quick, shorter.
Yeah.
That dude can play, man. He can play. I like him. That's a hell of a player.
Yeah, there's not much not to like.
Yeah, he's a hell of a player. A couple of questions before a couple of questions here. We got on my way to be on. Let's see. Updates on Max and Wright. I've written this stuff. We tweeted this stuff. We're not withholding anything we don't know. But if you don't follow us on Twitter or whatever, Max is throwing off the doing full bullpen sessions now. He was doing short box where the catcher's standing in front of home plate and it's more controlled and all that. But he had advanced to full BPs as of a couple days ago when I asked Snit. So I would think he'd be facing hitters pretty soon, live BP. And once he's there, then he's only got a few of those sessions, and then he's off for a rehab assignment. It's not going to be surprise me if he starts a rehab assignment. I'd say it's not going to surprise me within a week. It might be 2 weeks, but it's not going to surprise me if they say MX Fried starts his rehab assignment tonight. They'll just announce it without giving us any kind of warning on that. But he's at that stage. So, and once he does, I think you're looking at about a month, you know, a month rehab assignment where he's built up to starting to, you know, throwing 5 to 6 innings. So I would say that you could see him soon after the All-Star break if he starts a rehab assignment soon. You know,
has he thrown live?
No, that's what I said. He's throwing. I don't know. As of 2 days ago, he hadn't. He's throwing full bullpens though.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So you usually do at least one or two lives, and then
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what
that's
I
still
I
said about a month at least.
So I thought he would throw. I thought he'd throw a couple of lives, and then I think once he starts a rehab assignment, I think he'd probably be about a month away, maybe 3 to 4 weeks, maybe. But you'd at least 3 weeks of rehab, because you got to make at least like 4 starts.
Yeah, I mean, unless they want to bring him back on like a 75 pitch count or something, and
they don't want him back until he can go 5 innings.
But, yeah.
So we'll see. But anyway, real progress. Dylan Lee, same thing. He's throwing full bullpens. He'll be back a lot sooner because they're only have to build him up to throw an inning, obviously. So I think we could see him. We'll see him before the All-Star break. We could see him, I think, in a couple of weeks once he goes out of rehab.
Get him back.
Oh, man, that's big. Big piece for that pen, especially since you've added a couple more pieces in the interim, like Heller.
Yep. Yeah, he looked good.
Yeah, he's looked damn good, man. Wow. What a pickup. Man, the Rays don't make many mistakes when it comes to those things, but I think they did with him. And then Kyle Wright, he was supposed to start throwing Monday. I talked to him last week, and he was cleared to start. He was supposed to start this Monday, so I assume he did. He's back here. But that's a good sign. The MRI showed the inflammation that was in the shoulder before was pretty much gone. He said not entirely, he said, but if you look at any pitcher's shoulder, you know, that's been in the league for a while, there's going to be something in there, a little bit, but it was nothing like it was before. So he was doing the plyos, you know, all that stuff for about a week before he was supposed to start throwing Monday. And he said everything felt good so far when I talked to him during the last homestand. So, you know, there's hope that he's going to definitely be back later in the season. Whereas before, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of looking like if he doesn't improve soon, they might just shut him down. But he's definitely aiming to come back and pitch at some point this year. If they can get him back in August, you know, or even September, just to make a few starts and be ready for the postseason, that would be huge, potentially.
Well, that's how I'd look at both guys, honestly. I mean, thank God guys in the rotation have stepped up, especially Elder. But there'd be a completely different tone to all this if they hadn't. You know, it'd be... It's so hard not to rush guys when you're struggling or you'd have to make some trade. I mean, it all have a different feel to it. But
yeah,
with the guys holding down the fourth the way they have, you know, you can kind of shift your focus, and the team playing so well, you can shift your focus to, all right, let's take our time and make sure these guys are 100% when we bring them back because you want it for that playoff stretch.
Exactly. I mean, look at what they're doing without him. Jesus. Yeah. So if you can get Freed back soon after the All-Star break, if you can get him back before August, have 2 months of Freed, get him in down the stretch, be at full capacity, that would be a dream come true. In the meantime, you've got all these other guys that are pitching well, and you got some death pieces. If you're fortunate enough to advance in a postseason, you're not going to be having bullpen games in this postseason like the year they won the World Series.
No.
Which is still amazing what they did that year.
Soroka apparently had a pretty good start yesterday too. So, I mean, you got three guys that could be big contributors in the second half.
I was about to get to that. I would say more than pretty good. I mean, granted, it's AAA, but he had a no-hitter going until 2 outs in the 7th and a doubleheader. So there was only a 7-inning game. I mean, he wouldn't officially have gotten a doubleheader if it was a major league game in 7-8, but it was a no hits until he gives up a solo homer with 2 out in the 7th inning when he hadn't finished the 7-8. That was the only hit he gave up. And I thought just as impressive about the whole thing, he did it in 80 pitches.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a nice command, man. That was the problem when he was here, you know. And those starts he had here, he was going deep into counts, not being able to put away guys with 2 strikes, you know, walking more than he usually does. So definitely nice improvement. He's had a couple of good ones in a row, at least 2 in a row. So he'll be a factor. He's going to be a factor down the stretch for sure.
Yeah.
Schuster has pitched really well, surpassed my expectations considering how crappy he was in his first two starts this year. He's really pitched a lot better recently. But I mean, if Soroka keeps making strides, you could see him potentially replacing him. I'm not saying it's going to happen because he's still got it. There's a lot of ifs there, but, Schuster has pitched really well and he's obviously ahead of Dylan Dodd. But barring injuries, I don't know that we're going to see like Dodd again, you know, unless you have a doubleheader and a rainout or whatever. And even in those cases with the option rules and all that, what they are, that could go bullpen games, but they got a lot of depth and they've gotten through the toughest part, you know, without Fried and Wright. And when they had to play like 20 games in 20 days and they had to play all these tough, they got through the toughest part of the schedule and you're going to have the All-Star break coming up. So, pretty impressive what they've done and built their lead at the same time. And I mean, you could do that when you have the best offense in baseball, which they do. I mean, far as power, they lead the majors in OPS, lead the majors in slugging. They're second or third in average and runs. But they're just pummeling teams. Their just lineup is just so deep, man. And now with Harris hitting, Harris is looking like last year's Harris now. It just changes everything.
Oh, and you knew it was coming. I could tell it was coming when it's so hard when you make a change and you see the results, but they don't show up on the field. You know, he was lining out, getting robbed of homers, but he was putting great swings on it. And now with him locked in, I mean, it's kind of like it turns Acuña into a two-hole hitter where he's got a lot better chance of having guys on base.
Yeah.
And Harris is a guy that, you know, on a lot of teams, by this point, he's hitting toward the top of your order or even six or seven.
Oh, yeah.
You could have him in the nine hole.
Yeah, because when you got guys like Arcia and Rosario, you know, and Ozzy, I mean, you've got so many guys for the middle of the order that you can continue to do that, because if Harris didn't like hitting ninth, I think they would take that into account, but he does, and he's very good at it. And it helps him because, you know, when they wanted him to get out of that slump, well, you're not going to be in a better spot as far as getting things to hit, getting pitches to hit, than you are hitting in front of a Ronald Acuña.
No. I mean, it's basically like being in the three hole with Babe Ruth behind you at this point.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a pretty ideal spot for him, and it gives you those two speedsters right there in front of Olson. So your bases aren't clogged. Before Olson and Riley, Olson's been hitting further down the order lately, but I like that. That really has worked out well, too. Olson has been a good fit down further in the order, down the fifth spot, but you can't go wrong with any way you do that. They're just, it's something to see this team, like when you go into extra innings, you look at their extra inning record, I think it's 4-1 this year. That's so different than it's been in recent years. And so much of that is the fact that it really doesn't matter where their lineup comes up
exactly.
In the 10th or 11th inning. Whereas before, if it wasn't at the top of the half of the order, you're really going to struggle to get that run in probably. If you had your guys that you normally would in like 6, 7, 8 spots, it doesn't matter now because you got a guy capable of hitting the ball out of the yard or in the gap in every spot in the lineup.
Yeah. And the only guy that's really strikeout, you know, piles up some strikeouts is Olson. The rest of the guys, they're tough at bats, and Olson's a tough at bat too, don't get me wrong, but there's a lot of guys like grinders down there at the bottom of the order. Like, you get Rosario up in a big situation, you're not punching him out on three pitches. Same with Arcia.
Yeah.
And if you face the top, you know, you can't come see those guys.
And Snit's doing a good job with that what's become really a platoon in left field with Rosario and Pilar. That's a very effective, because Rosario is Rosario from that side is against righties is he's a really tough out this year. Dangerous again.
It's like those big situations wake him up. You know, some guys kind of panic and you can see him feeling the stress and trying to do too much. With him, I feel like it looks like he's been waiting the whole game for it.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. He likes it. You know, the deadline is a month and a little over a month and a week away, 5 weeks away or so. And we're already getting the questions. What are the deadline needs versus wants for the Braves?
I mean, it's health. Not like it. And yeah, they don't really have, you know.
Did you trade for health?
Yeah, you don't necessarily have to make a big move or have needs. I mean, right now, obviously you're not going to make a move right now. You're going to see what your needs are as you get closer to that. So that could all change with one injury. But right now, I mean, what would you do right now? You're not going to go out. Somebody asked about Bieber. Like, what? Do they need to go out and get Bieber and pay what you'd have to get for him? They don't have a whole lot of top prospects anymore. You know, most of them are up here playing. So no, I don't go out and trade for a starting pitcher, even a really good one. You've got good starting pitchers, and you got Max Fried coming off the IL, you know, within a month or within 2 months tops.
If one of those guys, of the three guys we brought up, Soroka locks in, Wright gets healthy or Fried gets healthy, you got four. You're four deep.
Yeah, and you don't need
two of them. You're five or six,
and you only need three and four for the postseason.
Yeah. So yeah, I trust Elder in the playoff game. Strider.
Yeah, absolutely.
Charlie can do it.
Absolutely, and anybody that's still saying that the metrics say that Elder's due for a correction. Okay, he had a couple of bad starts, and look how he's rebounded from those. Look what he did against a really good Phillies lineup in a hitter's ballpark yesterday. Pitched his ass off. Bryce Harper said that Bryce Elder's got great stuff, and the guy has no heart. He's a really slow heartbeat out there. He's a cool customer out there. It's so obvious watching him. He has no emotions out there. And even though people that just are obsessed with the radar gun, you got to look at what he's doing to that sinker and slider. And I thought I wrote today some quotes from Darno. I thought he had some great quotes about why he's so effective. All these guys throwing sinkers are throwing in the upper 90s now. Yep. And hitters are not seeing his type sinker in the minors or even in the major leagues.
It's a bowling ball. Like, it's a big sinker.
Exactly. So much depth on it, as he put it, as compared to the run that these guys who throw 98 are getting on their sinkers. So that's a big advantage for Bryce Elder. He's throwing pitches that other guys are not throwing. You know, we've talked a lot about why it's such an advantage for Spencer Strider to throw 99 from the arm slot and the height that he has and the extension that he gets, because it's got the effect of looking like a rise, like it's rising when it's not, but it's not going downhill like most of these 6'4", 100 mile an hour throwers who are coming over the top and not getting this 7 feet of extension. We talked about that. Well, it's the same principle with, you know, at what Elder's throwing. Nobody else is throwing hardly. So, I mean, that's his benefit. And hitters aren't going to be able to adjust to it because they're not going to see it from anybody else. And he dots those both sides of the plate, too. And down, keeps almost everything down in the zone. So when he gets in trouble, if you look at his averages, like they're like tops in the majors, top three in the majors with runners on base, because he can get that ground ball at any time.
Yeah, and that's when hitters try to do more, too. You know, they're trying to do damage.
Yeah.
You're almost, as a sinker baller, you almost have a harder time when guys are willing to take their single. Mm-hmm. But when guys are getting big, you know, there's runners on first and second, a double scores, too. Now they're trying to pull the ball and drive it in a gap, and that's when they roll over. You know, it's kind of, like you said, there's different types of sinkers, but it's such a blessing for him because he also doesn't have to be afraid to get behind in the count. When I was at my best, I was never afraid to be behind in the count.
Uh-huh.
So that allowed me to try to make a perfect pitch, first pitch. And then once I got into a hitter's count, I felt more comfortable. Like, okay, now he's going to go into pull mode.
Right.
When I was ahead, I was thinking, okay, he might try to slap and take a single here. And then if my sinker was up at all, what do you know? They hit a little single opposite field.
Right.
But in Elder's case, this is what I took from that Pete Alonso thing. I think his sinker's so good that hitters want him to throw anything but the sinker. And so that's why he was saying, throw it again about the slider. And
the slider,
I think it's good and tight, but in the zone, I don't think it's an amazing pitch. When it's down and it comes out like a sinker,
right,
that's when you see him chase it. But overall, I mean, if you have depth on your sinker and you give up a single, you can tell yourself, well, next guy held a double play. Like, it's such a confidence builder to be able to throw fastballs in hitters' counts and get outs.
Like, look at Jesse. He can get that ground ball anytime he wants to. And him and Jesse both are among the major league leaders in hit pitching and in averages allowed and everything with runners on base and OPS and with runners on base.
Just cutting both it and thinking them. It. Letting the hitters do too much.
Guys, let's take a quick break and then we'll finish up the show.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruit and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Here was a quote from Travis on Elder stuff, because they asked, you know, Snit, is he deserving of All-Star berth? And Snit said, absolutely. No doubt. And then Travis said he agreed 100%. He said he's deserving for sure. I mean, the way this season started, he wasn't even going to be up here. Remember, Bryce Elder was optioned in the middle of March, which is still hard to believe. You know, he was optioned to Triple A, and this guy might has a should be on the All-Star team. He's pitched well enough. He's got a 2.40 ERA. I think second best in the National League right now. It said for him to kind of fill the shoes of a Cy Young candidate and a 20-game winner last year and be succeeding, it's pretty deserving of an All-Star if you ask me. And then Travis was asking about how's he doing it, because if you look at the stuff, 89, 90, 91, you know, on the four-seamer and the sinker. He said his sinker has so much depth that it's something that not a lot of people see, either coming up in the minors or even in the big leagues. A lot of guys with sinkers nowadays are throwing harder with more run. So the depth of his sinker is very unique for him. And he has his changeup. He had his changeup today. It makes it a lot more fun because you can go three pitches. And obviously we all know how devastating the slider is and how much command he has of it. So when you have those three, including his four-seamer as well, which he had today, it makes a really fun day.
Well, it's so easy when the ball stays on the same plane and is just running across to elevate it. You know, you just swing level and you hit a line drive. If you miss it, it's a really hard ground ball. But when it's going down, now timing comes into play. You know, if you're early or late, you chop it. You hit the very top of the ball, and that's when you get those weak grounders that are double play balls and don't sneak through the infield.
Yeah. Bryce Harper was talking about him and said he's got good stuff, man. He's a guy that doesn't really have a heartbeat out there. I feel like he's going to be a really good pitcher from now, and if they get into the postseason, he's going to be really good for them, I think, just because he has no heartbeat. He's very slow out there. He knows what he's doing. And then he also noted that, you know, coming from the Big 12, being one of those power conferences in baseball, those guys are a little different because they've had, you know, some experience in front of crowds and against really good hitters, that kind of thing. So it's a little different than most kids that young.
Yeah. Any exposure you can get, and you can't really, there's not a minor league game to be had that has the feel of a big league game, but some of those college games definitely do, you know, college world series or certain conferences,
SEC
in the South, packing the house. Yeah.
Yeah.
People getting drunk and talking shit.
Yeah. Snit said Elder sinker. That's the beauty of what he's got going on. I mean, he's literally a pitch away from getting himself out of trouble. And it's pretty good in this ballpark against this club to keep the ball on the ground. Talking about Phillies. when you look at that stuff, he's throwing strikes with a really good sinker. The slider's coming, the changeup. I mean, he's got good stuff, and he's got a really good idea of what he's doing. And I swear, man, Elder is the most modest, unassuming guy. He just, like, puts his head down. He's like, I don't even want to do that. He doesn't even want to do interviews. He'll do them. Yeah. He's fine. But he's like, I'm just here to pitch. You know, that's the kind of mentality. Is he all business? But he said, we asked, you know, about Snit and Darno saying that he deserved to be on the All-Star team. And he said, you know, that's great coming from those guys, you know, but I just need, it's a long way to go. I just need to keep getting outs. I just need to keep getting outs. So go out there and keep pitching. But what was this thing? So your performance late last season and this year, is that kind of what you envision you could be? And he said, I think so. In a sense, you never know what you can be. You always believe you can have success, but you really don't know it until you kind of do it. I just try to be myself and just get ahead early, throw the sinker in there and hope they hit it at somebody. I'm kind of seeing that I can get outs up here. So I'm just going to try to keep doing that. Keep trying to do it.
That's such a good place to be, because anytime you start looking ahead to arbitration or all-star games, it's like, I remember this time, my first major league season, I was walking up the ramp, you know, out to the field in Seattle, and I was like 7-0 with like a 2-1 ERA or something like that, 50 games or something my rookie year, and I was like, pat myself on the shoulder, like, you did it, man. You're a major leaguer now. You've put together a good season. All you really got to do is just finish this thing out, and you make the team next year. And for whatever reason, I had the thought that day, and it was like that lapse in focus. I wound up giving up a 5-spot to the Orioles that night, which, you know, that's 2 months worth of scoreless to try to make up. Then a 3-spot to Oakland like a week later, and I wound up finishing the season with a 4.5 ERA. So the entire season itself just looked okay.
Yeah.
But I had a great year. I got ahead of myself for a second. And I think you need those moments to kind of learn to just never look ahead and always just take it day by day, because the second you get cocky or confident in that game, it humbles you in a hurry. Unless you're Cunha, then you do whatever you want.
You must have felt for that reliever yesterday in Philly when they called that Schwarber play in left field. They called it a single. Oh, my God. Know. That is like a 95% catch probability. Most guys even standing there, he's like slow as hell. So they called that a hit. It cost that reliever 4 earned runs.
They need to get that changed. I mean, it's the dumbest rule ever that if you leave your feet.
Yeah.
He was still terrible. On his feet.
Yeah, it was terrible.
I feel like, too, if I'm Schwarber, I'm calling up and being like,
yeah,
you got to give me an error on that.
And he said after the game it was an error, and everybody was howling in the press box. One of the radio guys came over and went, where's the score? Who called that a hit? It was like, nobody could believe it.
Really?
Yeah, it was bad. Yeah, yeah, it's older.
Those Phillies radio guys didn't like Ozuna's home run trot either.
I know, man. I heard that. I saw that highlight on ESPN. What do they call it? The hand dance?
Hand dance.
And he even criticized Wash. Come on, you can't criticize Wash.
No, you don't touch Wash.
You did touch
He's off limits.
I don't know, man. We've talked about this. We've made our feelings known on this. Yeah, okay, maybe 5-10 years ago. Yeah, you're not good. You can't do that. The game's changing, man. And what's the line? I don't know. Who sets the line? The line keeps getting pushed. And I don't know that he's disrespecting the other side. In these cases, I think he's not rubbing it in for the opponent. I think he's celebrating with his team and himself. But I don't get that he's like kind of pointing, wagging his finger at the opponent like you do in basketball or something. You know, I don't think that he's really looking at their dugout and talking shit like the time that Cruz was rounding the bases and talking shit to every Braves infielder.
Oh, Gomez.
Gomez. And McCann stood in front of home plate, did not let him cross. That's totally different. He was demeaning the pitcher first. He was talking shit to the pitcher. Then he's to every Braves infielder as he rounded the bases he was talking shit to. Ozuna's not talking crap to any of the opposing players.
No, so, and I think that is where they draw the line. You know, I mean, the players, first of all, the players will let you know where the line is. And over the last 5 or 6 years, I can't tell you how many pitchers have had a moment like that, and the game's just changed, you know. But they've had a moment like that, and they've just said, hey, if I don't like it, I got to make a better pitch. And for me, when I hear pitchers and players saying that and not getting mad at each other, then I'm like, they're dictating the culture. They're deciding what's okay.
Exactly.
Me watching, it doesn't matter what I think. I'm on the couch. I'm out of the game. Nobody cares what I think.
Or the radio, or the Phillies radio guy.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, if they care, they throw at Ozuna. They're not throwing at Ozuna.
Right.
When he does his little, you know, shimmy, the step, you know, between each bases now, he's doing it, you know, doing a little, the Euro step. He did like three of them, I think, the other day. And then the thing with Wash. Okay. Well, if the players don't like it, they're going to police themselves and somebody's going to throw at him. They didn't throw at him. When it was a 5-1 game, you know, well, they didn't score five till the 10th inning, but they didn't throw at the guy, and nobody else has either. So that kind of tells you where they stand with that. And they didn't throw at anybody else, like throw at their best player, you know, but they would throw at Ozuna specifically if they really were offended by what he's doing. So, I haven't heard one opposing player say, you know, Ozuna needs to cut that shit out or anything off the record or anything. So.
I mean, he was taking selfies at second base in the World Series or whatever it was.
Right.
I mean,
it's not rubbing it in for the opponent. You know what I mean?
No, and that stuff, I mean, it used to be a big deal. You know, I mean, the whole game used to be act like you've done it before, keep your head down, and don't show anybody up because it sucks to suck and you're just rubbing it, whatever. But that's done. The players don't care anymore. Everybody's having fun. There's some stuff that I see and I'm like, fuck, you know, if. That probably rubbed me the wrong way or pissed me off, but it doesn't matter how I feel because I'm at home. And the guys that are out there don't care. So I'm not, you know, I wouldn't be on the radio or anywhere else getting worked up over somebody's antics that don't bother the person that they're supposed to be offending.
Right. I mean, there's a few guys that were, if they were still in the league and still pitching, like Bumgarner, for instance, Bumgarner would say, would walk towards the line as he's doing that probably and say, okay, but Bumgarner isn't pitching anymore. And people were getting tired of his act too. So, you know, the game has changed.
Yeah. And you just have to adapt.
Yeah. You change with it or you become a dinosaur and people don't want you on their team. If you're, you know, you're not going with it. That's their vibe. And Snit knows that's their vibe and it's working. They're having fun. They love look at their dugout has more fun than it probably any team in baseball or as much fun throughout a game. They're on the top step. They're whooping it up. They're having fun with each other. I mean, if that's part of the vibe, then I'm all for it.
Yeah, and I'm sure Snit goes to bed shaking his head sometimes about the shit his team's doing and thinking about the game, you know, he was brought up in. Because Atlanta used to be the last place you'd expect anything like that to happen.
But absolutely. It was buttoned down.
He's done a great job adjusting, and you just – there's something – when guys get to do all that shit, there's something that it does for their confidence and how they feel and playing loose that you don't want to take away.
Yeah, I mean, Snit's a smart guy, and Snit is 67 years old, and as old school as they come, and if they had his druthers, if they were doing that, they wouldn't do any of this stuff. But at the same time, he knows it's not his game anymore. It's the new generation's game, and he loves his job, and he does a hell of a job doing his job. But that part of that is being able to be on the same wavelength with players, and he's pulling it off by adapting. Yeah.
No, he's nailing it.
Yeah. And surrounding himself with coaches who are the same way. Old school guys who look at Wash doing that thing with Ozuna there. Wash is old school, man, but he knows the game's changing. He wants his guys to have fun more than all. They want guys to get to the ballpark every day. Like Charlie Morton says, he wants to get to the ballpark every day because these guys are so much fun to be around. And if you start shitting on that vibe and saying you can't do this, you can't do that because you're worried about what the opposing radio guy says, and you're going to screw it all up.
Well, I promise you he's not worried about that.
No. Even if he got wind of it, which he probably wouldn't. But if he did, he wouldn't give a shit.
Not one.
So anyway, it's a fun team to cover, man. It's going to be an interesting rest of the season. I mean, they've gotten, like I said, through the hardest part of this. And they've surprised all of us by the way that they've continued to play. I mean, they just shrug off one injury after another, adversity after another. And now you got guys that were slumping so much earlier are all, you know, hitting now, and the parts are really clicking. They just got to stay healthy. If they stay healthy and they can get, like, Freed back and have a real top of the rotation, and Strider, you know, obviously you need Strider to be like he was in his last start. as opposed to that little run he had, that, you know, 5-6 start stretch where he looked very vulnerable. But the velo was back up in 99, you know, 0.9 the other day. He threw a bunch of pitches over 98. It was up a couple of ticks from before. So
yeah, he was.
Whatever he needed to figure out, it seems like he did, because he was back pretty close to being regular Strider the other day against the Phillies. And that's what they need, especially until Free gets back. But they need to go on the road to the postseason with Strider healthy and with Fried healthy, because neither one of those was the case last year. And look what happened.
Yeah, no, that's the main goal. That's why they got to pace themselves and take their time getting Fried and Wright back, and make sure that, you know, when you get to playoff time, everybody's ready to go.
Yeah, you got to have Fried and Strider at the top of your rotation in top form when you go to the postseason. Then you can fill in 3 and 4 with whoever, you know.
Yeah.
Charlie Elder, obviously, if he's pitching like this, will be the third guy. And then you fill in 4 with when you need it for the longer series with whoever you want. But that's the problem for down the road. But right now, their offense, though, if they just stay healthy and they don't lose any of these guys, they could beat anybody, because their offense is better than everybody's. It's just so good. And the bullpen is so tough, man. The bullpen is really good. Mentor looks like himself
Mentor
now.
Mentor being back is huge.
God, man, you've seen a guy turn it around so much. I mean, I know even during his month where he had the 6+ ERA, even that month he was having some really bad luck. The BABIP was really, really high. But he's getting he's keeping the ball down again now and throwing hard still, and he looks like the old Mentor now. I mean, he struck out the side yesterday, man.
Momentum. I think for him, just momentum's so important. Once he gets going and he's on a tear,
yeah,
he throws with so much confidence. You can see it. You can see it in his body language. Oh, they changed that to an error, it looks like.
Oh, they did finally.
Yeah,
that had to happen. Where'd you see that?
Somebody just wrote it. It was changed today. They changed it to an error.
God, that was a horrible call. All right.
All right.
Hey, listen, everybody. We really appreciate it. And 755 is real, and we are out. Thanks.
Thank you.